Well, good morning, guys. So glad that you are here to join us. Yeah, we're talking about marriage today, obviously, and we're going to talk about a very, very, very important topic as we've been talking in this series about four easy ways to blow up your marriage. And if you know, we're not really wanting you to blow up your marriage. So basically, don't do these things and your marriage will not blow up is what we're going to get into. Before I roll in to all of that, and we got some really good things we're going to share today, I want to talk about what we have coming up in March. So beginning the first Sunday in March, which will be March 3rd, if you haven't been here yet this month, we're doing something called the Generosity Challenge. And what we're doing in this Generosity Challenge is we're wanting you, no matter where you're at in the path of generosity, we can put the path of generosity up here, doesn't matter where you're at along that path, we want you to take the next step. And the reason that we want you to take the next step, if you've stayed with us any amount of time, you know that we don't want something from you as much as we want something for you. We want you to learn the power of joy. We want you to learn that Jesus' words, when he says it's better to give than to receive and have a lifestyle of giving and how much better, we want you to do that. And so we want to challenge you to take a next step. So if you go to our events page, nextlevelchurch.org/events, you can click on the button there that says 90-day Generosity Challenge, and you can get way more details about what each step looks like and what's going on there. And there is a thing that you can fill out, a little form that you can say, hey, yeah, I'm in. And here's what we're doing. If you will commit beginning March 3rd for the next 90 days to take the next step in your generosity, and you get to the end of those 90 days and you say, hey, it didn't work for me. I signed up for this. I tried this. And I just want you to know, don't really feel God's blessing. You don't have to do an interview with us at all. All you have to do is just say, hey, I tried it, it didn't work, and we will give you all your money back. How's that? So everything that you do, we will give it back to you because we believe God is true to his word, that if you will step into generosity, that he will be there to meet you. And we want that so desperate for you, we will put our money, so to speak, where our mouth is, and at the end of the night, we will do that. And so what we've been doing every single Sunday through February, we've been sharing with you stories of people here in our church that we know have the heart of generosity and letting them share with you about their life, their lifestyle, and what they would speak to you, because I know it gets to be a little bit scary. So this week, I want you to hear from Ashley, who has an amazing story about what God has done in her life. Let's watch this story, and we'll come back and we'll jump into our message for this week.
My name is Ashley Brown, and I came to Next Level about 9 years ago in 2010, and it was funny. We were looking for churches at the time, and we went to three different churches. And oddly enough, all of them were preaching on tithing at the time. It was the weirdest thing. And I felt like, it was comparing apples to apples for sure. So I came to Next Level. Their message was on tithing. But I loved how different it was. It was, we have a duty to give money, and we had a duty to tithe. But there are times where money's not there. So don't give up. Give of your talents. Maybe help the lady down the street, the single mom, or help the elderly. And I really love that message. Really stuck with me because it was so different. It was so different than the message that I'd heard previously. And something about it really stuck with me. Obviously, 9 years later, I remember what my first message was here. So all of that to say, it really got me into the church. And then I just loved how real it was. I loved the people here, and I loved how comfortable I was here. And so that's why we're still here. I think I would go with non-judgmental. It doesn't seem as, I guess it seems kind of blah, but it's so important because your story is safe here. My story has always been safe here. The fact that I can have this conversation with you and have this conversation with other people, it's because I've been here and because I've always felt like my story's safe and that I can share it and that no one's gonna judge me for where I've come from or where I'm going. And I'm always growing, I'm continuing to grow, and people don't judge me, and I love that. I think the key for me is that the Bible says when you bless, you will be blessed. And what I've learned through it is that, yes, I've seen some monetary value coming from financially giving, but I've also, more importantly, seen value in the contentment the contentment I've gotten, the peace I've gotten, the love and confirmation that I've gotten for God when I've needed it most, that is so much more important than what money could buy.
So again, the challenge that we have for you, hey, begin, jump on with us. No matter where you're at in that journey, we would love for you to take the next step and join us for 90 days, and let's just see what God can do. I look forward to hearing your story, just the same as we've heard the three stories so far. I know that God has a story for you, and we'd love for you to jump in with that. Well, we are in week three of our series, Four Easy Ways to Blow Up Your Marriage, and we began way back 2 weeks ago. We started talking about this idea of only giving your leftovers, that if you want a surefire way to blow up your marriage, then just only give your leftovers. And we talked about how to make love a verb, and we said way from the beginning that the reason that we need to talk about these things and the reason that marriage is so difficult is because we're all equipped to fall in love, but we're ill-equipped to stay in love, right? We can all fall in love. Remember week one we said, what does it take to fall in love? A pulse. That's it. But to stay in love is different. And so we need to turn love into a verb. We have to put some action behind what we're doing. We said that in week one. Last week, Pastor Joseph did a really good job of talking about how we need to turn to the other person and quit being selfish. That as long as we are selfish inside of our marriage, then we're going to run into relationship problems. And so I want to talk to you about a third thing. And everything that we've talked about so far, whether you're single, married, thinking about getting married, I think it applies across the board. This one certainly really does. Now, we can talk specifically to marriage, but this really does apply to all of our relationships. And the Apostle Paul, when he writes this passage we're going to look at in just a few moments, and he's not necessarily talking about marriage, but he's talking about relationships, and I think this really, really applies. But I want to talk to us about this idea of unmet expectations. You know, we all have expectations, they all have things, and when those things go unmet, there are problems. And I will freely admit that the biggest fights that Jody and I have had in our 25 years of marriage are when there is an unmet expectation and we haven't dealt with it and we've pushed it under the rug. I'm not talking about the big blow-ups where you have a big blow-up and then you make up at the end and the makeup at the end is kind of fun. I'm talking about the simmering kind of thing that's just been building and building. It's been going on maybe weeks, maybe months, right? Those biggest things have been around this idea of she has an expectation of what I should be doing or I have an expectation of what she has been doing, and we have not been doing them, and this unmet expectation just blows up. So I want to take a poll in here. How many of you here that have been in a relationship, or maybe you're married, in the course of that, you have dealt and come across this idea or this concept of unmet expectations? How many of you here? Yeah, look around. Everybody. Right? This is not a Christian thing. This is a thing. This is a being a human thing, and it's important for us to understand this because when we get married, okay, everybody comes in and they have their hopes and dreams for marriage, and it's beautiful, and I used to perform a lot more marriages than I do now, I just don't have time, but when the couple comes down the aisle, they're just smiling, they are glowing, they can't wait to get married, and the cynic side of me started picturing as they're coming down like this invisible backpack. And tucked inside this invisible backpack are all their hopes and dreams and expectations that they have of their partner. And the other person doesn't even know it yet. Because I know what's coming. A year into the marriage, 5 years into the marriage, it's like, take the backpack off and start throwing things at you, right? Because these are the expectations, okay? And this is what's happened. And I put on your notes this way. One of the biggest relationship killers that I see are when your desires, and we all have desires, and desires are good things, but when your desires become expectations, relationships die. And so I'm not here to say, hey, you shouldn't have any desires. You should have hopes and dreams and wishes. But when those desires become expectations, relationships die. And I can't even tell you how this happens. I just know it happens. That when our dreams and desires, and we put those on the other person, things begin to erode and they go south. This is why the only advice, and I promise you, the only advice that I will give you, if you're here and you're single and said, hey, Clay, you've been married 25 years, what's some advice that you would give me? Here's the advice that I would give you over and over and over. Make sure that the person you're marrying them for who they are today, not who you hope they will be tomorrow. You need to make sure that if you're getting into a relationship, that you are perfectly happy with who they are today, not who you think you can make them into, not their potential, whatever, that always goes south, right? Who they are today, not who they're going to become tomorrow. So ladies, if one of your dreams and desires is to be married to a guy who's going to care about following God, he's going to lead your family spiritually, he's going to pray with you, he's going to lead in this area, if there is no interest in his life right now for those things, it's not fair to him to then put that as an expectation on him after we get married, you're going to go to church and you're going to get saved and you're going to find Jesus and all these things that you have. That is an unfair, unmet expectation. And I know, ladies, you heard this story one time, you know, your friend and your friend married this guy and he came to church after they were married and he found Jesus, all good. Hey, I get that. We believe in this church, anything can happen. I believe anything is possible. But it is also possible that Nickelback could actually play good music. Just saying. We won't go there if that's one of your favorite bands. I'm sorry, we have a therapy group later. And guys, if you're dating someone, and it's always just drama. Everywhere you turn, there's drama. There's drama in her life. There's drama at work. There's drama with her family. There's drama inside your relationship. Everywhere you turn, it's just drama. And you think for some reason you're going to get married and all of a sudden the drama's going to go away. I got news for you. You need to marry somebody for who they are today, not who you hope they're going to be tomorrow. Now, for those of us who are married, here's the big issue that we have. When you got married, you had something special. Every single person I've ever seen get married, you had something special. You could see it in your eyes, the way you looked at each other, the way you talked to each other. You had something special. And then for those of you who've been married for a while, maybe it's 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, I don't know how long you've been married, but at some point, your marriage, if you looked at it now, you would say, well, I mean, nobody's calling a divorce attorney or anything, but it's just mediocre. And you have probably asked at some point, how did this happen? How did we get here? Because we used to have something that was amazing and something was special. What happened? And one of the basic principles that applies to this message and really applies to relationships, if you want to get it back, is simply this, and it's in your notes. To get what you once had, you have to do what you once did. To get what you once had, you have to do what you once did. And one of the things, there were many things that you once did, but one of the things that you used to do back when you were madly in love and you had something special is you had fewer expectations. And what happens is over time, these expectations grow and they become burdens. And as those things become burdens, they begin to kill relationships. So we're going to look in just a second as Paul begins to talk to us about what a Christian marriage looks like. And he does this when he's writing a letter to a group of people in a town called Ephesus. And he happens to say, hey, if you want to know what a Christian marriage looks like, let me give you some thoughts and ideas on what this looks like. But before we get into that, let me give you my summary of what Paul is writing. Real quick, one summary of what a Christian marriage is. Now, a lot of us have pictures of what a Christian marriage is. Some of us say, well, I'm a Christian, and he's a Christian or she's a Christian, and when we get married, then we have a Christian marriage. No, you don't. Not necessarily. It's two Christian people who got married. That doesn't make it a Christian marriage. Well, we got married in a Christian church. That makes it a Christian marriage. No, it doesn't. There's a real thing that Paul will tell us, and we're going to pull apart, that begins to lay the groundwork. This is what a Christian marriage is. And some of you are going to push back on this, and some of you are not going to like what I have to say. But here is basically a Christian marriage is just a marriage where your spouse owes you nothing. That's a Christian marriage. Where your spouse owes you nothing. They don't have to do anything. There's no expectations that are placed on them. That when you operate from that arena, that is a Christian marriage. So this is how Paul puts this when he begins to write to this church in Ephesus in chapter 5. Verse 21, there's a whole lot they have to say. We're going to just look at this first sentence here. He says, okay, you want to know what a Christian marriage is? Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Now, he goes on to give some specific details about what that can look like for a husband and for a wife, but he begins saying, hey, both men and women, this doesn't apply to one person, doesn't apply, it applies to both of you. And I get that that word submit is a loaded time bomb. And ladies, I just have to say, apologize that it has been misused over and over to put women into a lower place, to make women subservient to men. And that was never the intention of what Paul would write. And so we kind of have to dial back from that and say, hey, I know it's been misused, but in this context, Paul says this. And what he says and what he means by that word submit is simply this: to prioritize another person's needs over your own. That's what he means. That when you look at that person, you prioritize what they need over your own needs. Submit to one another. Prioritize the other person's needs over your own out of reverence for Christ. So what we're talking about here is the difference between the kind of marriage that is a contract and the kind of marriage that is a covenant, because a marriage is way more of a covenant than it is a contract. And do you know the difference between the two? Let me explain the difference between the two. A contract is a legal document written up to normally protect something, to protect your rights, to protect your assets, and it's normally written, and they're generally kind of one-direction contracts to protect someone else, right? So if you go and you rent a home, there's a rental contract. At least if you're in North Carolina, does it protect you as the renter much? Oh, no. It protects the landlord. Those are contracts. A marriage is more like a covenant. A covenant is built on relationship. I am entering into a relationship with you. Your needs are above my needs. I want to serve you. I want to work with you. This is what a marriage is, and this is what Paul is saying. You want to begin with a covenant. And a covenant in marriage quits focusing on finding the right person and making that person the right person. A covenant says, I'm going to be the right person. I'm just going to be the right person. So let me give you real practically two quick things. One thing we're going to give you really, really quick, and then we're going to go in depth in the second point. Let me give you a couple of things on how you can work on this idea of unmet expectations and make your marriage better. And the first one, just real practical, the first one is simply this. When you think something good, you need to say it. I know that's a deep thought. When you think something good, you need to say it. And here's what I mean by that. Ladies, if I could speak to you, I do not think you understand the power of your words. That when you have your husband and you see him doing something and you really are thankful or grateful for that thing, or you see him doing something really, really well, do not underestimate the power of just pulling him aside and saying, hey, I see that you get up and you go to work every single day, and I know you hate your job, and I know that that job makes you miserable and you wish you could find something else. I just want to tell you, I appreciate the stability that you are bringing to our family, and I love you for that. You have no clue what that means. Let me help you understand this. Let's pretend that I get several thousand emails a week of how great my messages are. That does not happen, right? But let's pretend that I do, okay? Let's pretend just thousands and thousands of messages come in, and I'm reading them. Oh, Pastor Clay, you're awesome, you're amazing, the message was great, blah, 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 right? All of that doesn't even compare 1 second to when I leave this stage and I leave this building and my wife and I, we go home and I ask her this question. So what'd you think of the message? You could say all kinds of wonderful things. I love you. I don't care. As compared to what my wife says. Oh, that message was great. I like this point. Oh, you bombed. It was horrible. It was terrible. I wanted to climb under a chair, right? I love the point that you made. I wished you would have left me out of the illustration, right? You see what I'm saying? Her words, ladies, you need to understand this. Your words mean more than you know. Men, same applies to you. When you have that thought in your head, you know what? I should really tell my wife how much I love her. I should really tell her, I appreciate this, that I love this thing about her, that as we have grown together. when you think those thoughts, you should say them. Because you're not getting any credit for what you think. You need to speak those things out loud. So whenever you think something, say it. Simple thought. Let's move on to something deeper here. I want to spend a lot more time here. Second thing, if you want to improve your marriage in this area of expectations, if you want something different, you need to be different. If you want something different, then you need to be it. If you want something different in your marriage, then you be the thing that is different in your marriage. Another way to say this, if you don't like what you're getting, look at what you're giving. This echoes what Paul is saying there when he is writing to that group of, if you do not like what you're getting, look at what you're giving. Because if you're giving self-centeredness, if you're giving everything's all about me, then that is probably what you're going to get back. Now, I want to look at the same author, Paul, and I want to look a little deeper into something that he wrote to a different church that he wrote in a place called Philippi. And so he's writing to a group of individuals. This particular passage, he doesn't mention marriage. He's not talking about marriage, but he is talking about how we are to relate to each other. And there's some very large principles here that we can take, and if we apply these to our marriage, then our marriage will get better, especially around this idea of, you know what, if I want something different, I need to be something different. So what Paul writes to the church in chapter 2, begins in verse 3, he says, do nothing out of selfish ambition and vain conceit. What does he say? Just do a few things. What does he say? Do nothing out of selfish ambition and vain conceit. We could stop right there, and your marriage would get 100 times better if you just applied that. Our relationships would get better if we would just apply that. But he goes on. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, he knows how hard this is going to be. So he says, in humility. Because I get it. It's hard. You're going to have to humble yourself. In humility, value others above yourself. In other words, act like he's more important than you. Act like she is more valuable and more important than you. It's the same thing that he's writing when he says, here's what a marriage looks like. When he says, submit to one another. Put someone else's values above your own. It's the exact same thing. In humility, value others above yourself. And he goes on. Not looking to your own interest. And here's the key. But to the interests of others. I have to admit, that's hard. This is hard to do. Because guess what kind of things I'm interested in? Things that interest me. I'm not interested in what interests you. I'm selfish. We all are. I am in it for the things that bring me joy, that bring me happiness, and bring me satisfaction, and so are you. This is hard. This is very countercultural because culture says, hey, you do what's right for you. You go what's best for you. And Paul is saying, no, you need to put someone else's interest above your own. Now, when it applies to your relationships and your marriage, let me tell you, you used to do this. Let me tell you how you did this. Ladies, let me speak to you. At one point, before you got married and before you are where you used to, you went camping and slept in a tent. And told your spouse, oh, I love camping. I love pooping in a hole. It's amazing. Let's go do it again. Men, you used to go on your own and pop the popcorn in the microwave and come sit on the couch and say, turn on that Lifetime movie. I just would love to watch this Lifetime movie with you. You used to do that. You see, you were at one point able to put the interest of someone else above your own. You used to do that. But at some point in your relationship, you decided, well, I'm not going to do that anymore. Let me tell you how powerful this concept is. Let me drill it into something that I see on a regular basis over and over and over. Ladies, let me talk to you first. Ladies, there is more than likely another woman out there who would love to be with your man. I know you find that funny. I know there's part of you that says, come getting. I. But there is another woman out there who would like to be with your man. And you know how she's going to get him. It's not going to be wearing short skirts to work. It's not going to be wearing low-cut blouses. She is going to get him by showing up and pretending to be interested in the things that he's interested in. Seen it over and over and over and over and over and over and over. And if he's not getting that from his partner, it has an attraction. Men, somewhere out there, there could be a guy who would love to be with your wife. And do you know how he's going to get her? It's not by going to the gym and getting buff. He's going to begin to show interest in the things that she's interested in. And over time, again, if she's not getting that at home, there's going to be a draw. I'm not excusing the behavior. I'm not saying that this is right. I'm just telling you that's how it happens. Paul is saying there is an attraction when you put the interest of others above your own. So why would you not continue to apply that in your own marriage? This is a massive principle in context of relationships. Paul goes on. Verse 5, in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset of Christ Jesus. Again, he's saying the same thing as Ephesians 5. You know, the motivation that you're going to do these things, and I'm going to place you above myself, is not because you deserve it, not because you've earned it. I'm going to do this because Christ has already done it. And since he did it, I'm going to mimic him, and I'm going to model him. Had the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man. He humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. He literally emptied himself out and said, you know what, I'm going to put your value, I'm going to put your hopes and dreams, I'm going to put your life above my own life, above the fact that I am the God of the universe. I'm going to lower myself into your world, and I'm going to prioritize you over me. This is why this dynamic is so important inside of relationships. We have to understand this. That if all I ever do is continue to dump my expectations on Jody, you need to do this, you need to do this, and you need to do this. If I just dump my expectations on her shoulders, over time, the romance and the intimacy in our relationship just disappears. And the reason that it disappears is because I begin to have the thought, well, she owes me. She owes me. And all of a sudden, our relationship has moved into what I would call a debt-debtor relationship. So when she does things that I expect her to do, she doesn't gain any ground with love. She just gets up to zero. You're just back to zero because that's what I expect out of you. And since you're doing what I expect, I mean, there's no continued gratitude. There's no, oh, I love you for that. No, you're just doing what I expect. This is what you should be doing. There's no extra credit given. She's just getting back to zero. Nobody's throwing a party because, oh, you're finally the husband that I expected you to be. Right? You're just getting back to zero. Let me explain it in another way. This will help you understand. I have never gotten a card. I have never gotten a phone call. I've never gotten a present from Bank of America that said, hey, Clay, thank you so much for making your mortgage payment. I just want you to know that we are so appreciative that you make your payment and you make that payment every single month. We are so grateful. Because of that, here's just a gift. Go on a vacation. Let's do something together. Bank of America has never, why? Because that is an expectation that I took out a mortgage, I signed a contract, I make the payment. And when you have an expectation on your marriage, no matter what they do in their marriage, as long as they do it, there's no appreciation there. You're just back to here. Let me lay this out for you practically. Men, if the expectation is that your wife is supposed to have sex with you 2 to 3 times a week, let's go back to maybe 2 times a month. I saw the horror on your wife's face. If that is the expectation, then when that happens, all she does is get back to zero. And what you have done is you have taken away the ability for her to show you love in that area, because now I'm just meeting your expectation. I'm meeting your obligation. Right? Ladies, if your expectation is that your husband is going to come home every evening from work and he's going to sit on the couch with you and he's going to cuddle you and he's going to hold you and he's going to listen to all the words that you have, word after word after word. If that is your expectation, then when he actually comes through and fulfills that and does that, he gets no credit for that, because you know what? I expected that. Now you're just at zero. You have robbed your husband the ability to show you that he loves you in that area, because now it's an expectation. You see where I'm going with this? You see how this works? And some of you might be thinking, well, as a Christian marriage, you just have no desires and no hopes. That's not what I'm saying. We all have hopes. I would go as far as to say the dreams and desires you have are God-given dreams. God-given desires. You have a God-given desire to be romanced. You have a God-given desire to feel appreciated. You have a God-given desire to have intimacy, to be held, to be accepted. But when you take that God-given desire and you drape it on the shoulders of the one that you are with as an expectation, now it's a burden. You see this? That a Christian marriage is, you know what, she owes me nothing. She owes me nothing. Because as long as I think she owes me something, I have killed every opportunity for love, for intimacy. It's dead. You see, God-given desires, they can't become expectations. So I want to give you some homework real quick. This is what I want to ask you to do this week. And if you're at a place in your marriage, I promise you this will help. The very first thing that I want you to do, and all this is in your notes because I didn't want you to forget it and go, oh no, I forgot what he said. No, it's already written out. I want you to go home, and I want you to think about that significant relationship within, your husband, your wife, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, and I want you to write out all the expectations that you have. I want you to spend some time. I want to write them all down, that they do the dishes, that they mow the lawn, change the oil in the car, pay the bills, wash the clothes. What are the expectations? You say, well, Clay, how do I know the difference between a dream and a desire and expectation? Here's how you know. You do not show gratitude for expectations, because I expected it. You know, you come to work, and you come to work on time, nobody throws a party. Hey, you're here on time. Well, maybe they do because you're chronically late, but no one throws a party because that's what you're expected to do. So if you're not showing gratitude, there's an idea. That's probably an expectation that you have. And I want you to write them all down. Write all those things down. Then what I want you to do for the next 7 days, let's do it. Start today. Do it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I want you to read in your Bible. You can get the Bible app. If you can't find Philippians, get the Bible app. It's really easy. You don't have to turn pages. You just go to Philippians. Philippians chapter 2, the one that we're in. I want you to read the whole chapter. And guys, it's short. I want you to read the whole chapter. And then I want you to ask the question. When I'm looking at this list of expectations, God, how does this apply to my marriage? How what I am reading right here, how does that apply to my marriage and what I have going right here? That's what I want you to do. We do that this week. I promise you things will change. And could you imagine being here a year from now, 2 years from now, and say, man, we have the best marriage ever. I am more in love with my wife than I've ever been in love with my wife. That when you begin to look and say, I am so overwhelmed by my husband. Could you imagine being in that place where each of you just went after each other's desires and what that would do for your heart? This is what Paul is saying. This is what a relationship is about. It's up to you to take the next steps. Let me pray for you. So Jesus, I pray for all the relationships in this place. I especially pray for marriages. Some of them are sitting in a marriage and they've been married for a while and they're wondering, what happened? What happened? They never imagined on that day that they got married. They would have never imagined that in a million years that they would be in the place that they are in now. God, I pray that you would help us do the difficult thing. This is not easy. This is why your servant Paul said we have to humble ourselves. God, help us to do the hard thing of realizing what we have put on the shoulders and the burden that we have placed on the person that we love most. And God, help us begin to dial those things back. God, help us to humble ourselves, to give up our lives, our needs, our wants, our desires, and prioritize that other person. Lord, we pray this in Jesus' name. We're going to do something.